I don't think most people are going to get Bitcoin. They don't even understand the system we're in now. That's why we're in this system, is because the vast majority of people have no idea the system that's being played on them.
What if there's a 6102? Well, no, that would never happen. Well, it did 100 years ago, less than 100 years ago, and could happen again.
That's how you know Bitcoin is really the only option for humans. If you just want freedom and you just want to be left alone, and then like have society incentivized towards merit and accountability, responsibility, Bitcoin is far and away the only answer.
Self-custody, run a node, self-sovereignty, establishing a plan B for your life, for your family. Those are the sorts of things that I think people need to orient themselves toward and focus on.
And that's why I came to Bitcoin, ironically, because I saw the world that I came from, where I was like, whoa, like, this is insane. Like, what I'm having to do just to, like, go acquire a property, the amount of time, energy, man hours, capital, just to acquire an investment property, the average guy, they can't do this. Like, that's not how life is meant to be. Like,
hey everyone, Michael here with the Bitcoin Way podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Today on the show, I have Brandon Gentile. I got to meet Brandon at the Bitcoin conference last week. He is an awesome guy, lots of energy, lots of fun and controversial opinions on many things. I think generally he and I see eye to eye. We cover a lot of topics, from the Bitcoin conference to politicians coming into Bitcoin, stable coins, Bitcoin lending products, just about everything you can imagine that is a hot topic today. I think you are absolutely going to love this show. Hey everyone, like I said in the intro, I've got Brandon here with me. Brandon, welcome to the Bitcoin Way podcast.
Glad to be here, Michael. Thanks so much for having me. It's an absolute honor. Thank you.
Dude, this is going to be a fun conversation. So we had the chance, this is going to be out maybe another week from now, but we had a chance to meet last week in Las Vegas for a bit, catch up. And I just want to start with your thoughts on the conference, man. What was your experience?
So this is the first time I've really been in Vegas. Well, I guess I was at Unconfiscated. Well, I was going to say, I thought it was the first time I was in Vegas for a conference, a work conference. Usually it was for hockey or something like that. But it was an incredible atmosphere. Like you and I were talking offline. Like there's a lot of noise, just because, physically there's just a lot of humans there. So there's literally a lot of noise. Then there's also the figurative noise going on. But it's amazing just to see. I mean, you and I ran into each other numerous times. There's so many people to go and just be around. I think that, honestly, for someone going to, or just kind of getting to the space, I think it really is an incredible opportunity if you can go, just to go and just to be around the energy, see all the businesses, and honestly, just being around Bitcoiners or at least people in that industry, you see where the world's going. And I think that's probably one of the most important things, is just seeing where the world is going, seeing where the puck is going, as the great Wayne Gretzky would always say. And I think that's what's really important, is seeing where the future is headed, and many young people. And then there's a lot of the young minded people there. It doesn't matter what age you are, truly. It's a state of mind. I think that's where you start seeing everything kind of unraveling before your eyes. So for me personally, it was really an incredible experience. Met tons of people. Saw a lot of people that I see each year, and just kind of developing and furthering relationships. So I think overall it was really good. I personally didn't see tons of the panels, tons of speakers. I probably only saw a handful, just because we were so busy running around and working, so to speak, and just talking to people. I look at it again. I think that community is the number one thing in a survival situation, But then I think in my opinion, the most important thing I can do going to these conferences is just talking to other Bitcoiners, other people, spending time with you, spending time with all these other people that think the same, because it's the reason I found Bitcoin years ago, is because 15 years ago, I was leaving, the financial crash was happening. And then I was playing professional hockey, and I'm thinking, what is happening? Like, there's a game being played. It led me down the rabbit hole. I found Creature from Jekyll Island, all these different, this literature, all these things I was reading and studying. And I started realizing there is this game being played. It's not red versus blue. It's a state versus you. And there's bad things coming. It was all. And then as this in the last 15 years has played out, it's only reconfirmed everything I thought and knew and learned from history. And so you're sitting there thinking, I've got to prepare my family. Like, I have to do this. And the only way I know to do that is to, gain knowledge, but also take action and meet people that are like-minded and build that Citadel, which we talk about in the Bitcoin world all the time, you know, building a citadel, building groups of people that are like-minded so you can weather these storms that are coming. I think there's massive hope on the backside in the coming years, but I think there is a strong potential of things getting worse before it gets better, but we have to weather that somehow. And I think that these Bitcoin conferences are an incredible way to do that. And to, the last thing I'll say is just see all kinds of different people in the space. I mean, you're seeing vendors, businesses, you know, they have the bazaar, the way it's set up. I mean, you have all these different vendor booths and the bazaar, the small businesses in Bitcoin. You've got the speakers, you got the whale VIP area, you know, all kinds of stages and panels. It's set up in a way where, you know, the media, press lounge, all these different things, there's a kids area where you can see the whole gamut. I mean, it's an entire ecosystem. It literally is a microcosm of what Bitcoin is. It's a new system that a lot of the old world is trying to fit everything into in a round peg square hole, and they can't make sense of it. It's because it's a new system. It's completely new. Humans have never seen anything like it. So that's why the energy is nothing. I mean, we've all been to business conferences before, and there's nothing like going to a Bitcoin conference. You know, a fiat conference is brutal. And, you know, it's just like, it's a zero-sum game. It's not, you know, it's all fake. It's, you know, Toastmasters. Poor Toastmasters always gets the brunt of things now. From now, you know, everyone's always, it's like this networking thing, just the network. And this is truly different. So overall, I think it was amazing. But, you know, there are definitely, like you alluded to, there's definitely some noise, literally and figuratively. But I know we're going to tap into, I'm sure, a little bit more here.
Yeah. Well, something that struck me as you were talking. So I think I generally share the sentiment. Like, I didn't catch a lot of the talks. I spend most of my time. I met so many of our clients. It was really cool to see. I mean, just great people. I got to talk with you. Got to talk with a lot of our partners. Have dinner with one of our partners one of the nights. And so I think for all of the, I can sympathize completely. I mean, very completely with people who are like, it's a shitcoin conference, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Like, some of the noise there is just ridiculous. But if you can sort of, you know, just ignore all the distraction and focus in on the people, I still think there's a lot of signal to be had just in like these one-on-one conversations, you know, little chats with groups of people. What struck me though, was I was trying to imagine myself early on in my journey when I'm trying to like sort out Bitcoin from crypto and like what's going on. Maybe what concerns me the most as I think about it is if you're new to Bitcoin, you're like, oh, I'm just going to like learn. Like, I was fortunate. My first conference was Pacific Bitcoin a few years ago. And so it was really just Bitcoin. And it was before a lot of the, you know, kind of scammy stuff started to come about. Or at least it was early stages. Most of the people you would talk to were real Bitcoiners talking about real Bitcoin things. But if you're early on your journey, do you have concerns that someone showing up to the Bitcoin conference would be going to some of these booths and hearing narratives that they then associate with Bitcoin, but that's, you know, they're kind of missing the signal because they just don't know any better?
Yeah, 100%. And that's where, you know, I you go back to, it's for people with ears to hear and eyes to see at the end of the day. And I mean, I know probably 8 years ago, is I was buying Bitcoin, started buying Bitcoin, and I bought a bunch of other shitcoins as well, like smaller position sizes, because I just didn't know. And unfortunately, I didn't get wrecked. I ended up, over the next year or two, as I learned more, I converted all that to Bitcoin. And then my thinking was solidified in 2020, and just seeing like, oh, okay, wow, yeah, I'm going the right way. Like, it was kind of everything that I thought was going to happen. You see the Canadian truckers, you know, all these things play out, the Dutch farmers and people getting censored, and then, you know, different blockchains being stopped and different altcoins, their network being, you know, stopped or frozen, or just these exchanges going down. And so all these things are these bullet points along the way that just kind of reaffirm your education or whatever it is. But in the beginning, yeah, I mean, like, everyone comes in, and I think that's something that Bitcoiners do forget from time to time. Like, I shouldn't say just Bitcoiners, but it's humans. Like, you forget where you came from. It's just natural. And you kind of just, it gets lost. And you have to realize that everyone is starting from that point where they just don't know. And if you don't have any knowledge of cryptography, or don't have any knowledge of game theory or adversarial thinking and like all these different things, then it's going to be very hard for the average person at first. They're inundated with all these fancy, you know, gimmicks and affinity scams, and we're just like Bitcoin, or the better Bitcoin. Cause it's playing off of what people know now in the fiat world of like, we're the better thing, we're the next thing. And that's just, it just fits the concept of like what we're used to as human beings. And so many people go down that road, and then they end up getting burned, which again, I know a lot of people would say, well, hey, that's how you learn and pain's a great teacher, as my father would say, which is true. But yeah, I mean, it would be nice to see people just focus and dial in on the, I think the thing that I struggle with the most, and I'm going to try not to say all this because it was kind of, this is part of my unpopular opinion a little bit. but it's, there's a decision. Like, people can just need to make a decision. That what's so hard and so frustrating at times with Bitcoin or money is that people will adopt technology very quickly, like a ChatGPT, because it's very easy to get in and it's very easy to get out. Well, money is harder to get into to a degree, but it's harder to get out, or it's slower to get out of it, which hopefully is better for all of us, in the sense of, if you do take time to have, you know, educate yourself, then hopefully you never get out of Bitcoin. But in saying all that, the technology, people just jump in and jump out, and we're so used to that. But the, like, Bitcoin itself, you hopefully are putting in this work that is changing the dynamic of your thinking. I mean, you're changing everything about yourself. I mean, I know it's changed many things about me and my life. I'm sure you, many people that I know, it's completely changed our lives, because it's a complete seismic change in society. It's you know, fire. We didn't know, we couldn't do things like we can now with fire and all the different use cases of fire. And it's the same thing we have with Bitcoin, where it's opening up all these use cases we don't even know about yet. And the thing that's most frustrating now, landing a plane and circling it back around, is it's a decision. You know, it's all it takes. Like, society tomorrow could wake up and say, 5%, 10% of society say, I don't trust the dollar, I'm done with that. It would collapse overnight. And that's the thing that people, well, I've got aircraft carriers. It don't matter. Like, it does not matter. If people just wake up tomorrow and make a simple decision, say, I'm not using a money that steals from me anymore, it's over. The game is done. And that's it. Doesn't matter how many aircraft carriers you have or how many F-22s and F-35s you have. Does not matter. And so that's the thing that I think a lot of Bitcoiners are waiting for, that time where there's going to be this iceberg flip gradually and suddenly. And maybe that happens. Maybe there's some, like, black swan, but maybe not. Maybe it's just a gradual process of us kind of figuring things out, learning, going back to these Bitcoin conferences where people are going there and seeing things. Yes, do people get caught up in the noise? They do. You know, obviously, that's just part of it. It would be nice to see people focus and dial in and have this concerted effort of, and because I'm a freedom maxi first. I mean, if people want to go gamble and go to the casino, is that the Venetian, for crying out loud? Like, if you want to go gamble, like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you what to do or whatever. If you can't get in this altcoin, you can't go to the Venetian and gamble or whatever you want to do with your life. But the powers that be, or the people that have wherewithal, or people that have wealth, to just kind of the willfully ignorant and just be like, well, I can make some more fiat, I can do a little bit more. That to me is like this humanity question that grinds my gears probably more than anything, of like, why do that? You know, like, your soul's on the line. And I know a lot of people just don't even think like that anymore. And that's just not in the lexicon of life anymore. But it's like, why are we trying to, you know, scam someone, or rationalizing, you know, scamming someone else, where it's like, well, that's the system, that's the game we plan. So I'm going to get mine, and I'm going to buy more Bitcoin with it. And then, like, you know, a lot of people are like, well, I'm buying more Bitcoin with it. It's like, well, you're scamming this person in order to, you know, accrue more wealth for yourself. I mean, it just doesn't make sense anywhere. And that's just the fiat system. That's the incentives of the system and how where we've devolved to. And it would be nice, again, to have this world where you could have these big conferences and people just completely focused and dialed in on Bitcoin, because that's the one thing. If you change the money and you have this new system, the incentives doesn't fix everything overnight, but the incentives start falling the right way, and we start having better luck with things happening because we're now making the correct decisions. And that's the thing I think that's frustrating, where we're like playing in these two worlds, and you're constantly fighting the education with people that are just coming in, pre-coiners, no coiners, and they are being caught up in this world where it takes us time and energy to go to educate people instead of us going and, you know, doing other fun things or hobbies or passions. Or maybe someone, again, has a cure for cancer, but then they're stuck in this world of, I'm trying to educate people and help them cross this bridge, and I can't go do the thing that I'm meant to do. That's the stuff that's really frustrating. And those are the things that, again, there are second, 10th, 100th order effects that the average person just doesn't, again, have time to think about. But that's where we're kept back. Like, we are held back, and I believe in a modern dark age, quite honestly, because of the noise, because of we keep, you know, trying to put the cart before the horse. We're trying to, you know, a little squirrel trying to gather more nuts at the behest of someone else, and not doing things in a what I believe is a morally ethical way. everyone, you know, again, unpopular opinions, everyone's going to, you know, have people argue about that and what is what. But until we really put the horse in front of the cart, it's going to make life very difficult for people. And for some reason, we all have this thing where we know people that are struggling. We know family or friends, and it's because of this game that we continually play, and we can't get out of our own way as human beings for whatever reason. And here we are.
Yeah, man, no, I couldn't agree more. I guess maybe for listeners who are a bit newer, trying to figure things out, I think there's a lot of noise, and this isn't just unique to the Bitcoin conference. There's a lot of noise in sort of the crypto space, so to speak. And I would just say you're going to hear principles that are sort of undying: self-custody, run a node, self-sovereignty, establishing a plan B for your life, for your family. Those are the sorts of things that I think people need to orient themselves toward and focus on. And if you stick around long enough and you just focus on those things to begin with, a lot of that noise is going to fade, and then new noise is going to come in. Cause it's like every year, a couple of years, it's just like, there's like a new trend, a new hot thing to jump on. And so, not to make any assumptions about what it is that you should be getting into. I mean, I think the big thing is if you're early, get off zero, get into self-custody, and then you can start putting together the rest of the pieces later, figure out what works for you. But don't make those decisions rashly. Don't rush into something because it sounds shiny and you've got to get in on the ground floor. I mean, just get into Bitcoin, you know, like start there. So you said you didn't get to see a lot of speakers. Did you get to catch anyone in particular that did stand out or you enjoyed?
Yeah, I mean, I've watched a little bit of them afterward, because that's the beauty of it. I mean, they live stream and record all these, so you can go network and build relationships, which in my opinion is the most important part, and then you can always go watch these things after. So I've already started kind of going down the road watching a few of them. I haven't got to watch all of Saylor's speech yet. I saw, you know, Ross Ulbricht's. That was the one I watched most of. That was an interesting one. Interesting thoughts on that one. It's fascinating.
No, tell me. Tell me what you think.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was I'm not Ross. I mean, so I'm mind reading, but it was tear jerking and just phenomenal in one way. And at the same time, you felt like you're kind of someone behind the scenes there pulling strings and hey, if you say this, we'll do this for you. A very unpopular opinion probably, but I did talk to a lot of Bitcoiners afterward that were a little bit shook by his speech to end the conference, and we're just kind of like, what do you mean? Like the message on surface, like decentralization, unity, freedom, like, yeah, that's great. That's amazing. Yeah. But it felt like there was, it felt like it was an attack on Bitcoiners. Let's just say that we're the toxic people in Bitcoin are disrupting everything. And it just felt off. And I, again, I don't know how to explain it, but it just felt like an attack on Bitcoin. Because you have a lot of the altcoins, a lot of the scams out there, altcoins, affinity scams, like all these different things. Their whole big thing is like, well, why don't you just let the free market decide? Like, why are you coming after us? And this is the whole cart. And this is what I was just kind of laying out. Like the cart, stop putting the cart in front of the horse. You cannot go, like, we will continue to live in this rotten system, this, you know, communist system. Like central banking is communist. It's a disease on society that is enabled all these atrocities, hundreds of millions of dead through communism, world wars, really all perpetrated by central banking. And so it's not like that we didn't have wars before this and things like that, but it was very different. And it's been exacerbated by central banking and a few powers at the top, in essence. And I say that's probably 100 families or whatever, like central banking families that have perpetrated inflation and stealing people's time and energy to take it for themselves. And then they just send other kids to war on their own behalf. And so that's the disease we have. That's the sickness we have that's been exacerbated and amplified, you know, by 100 through now instead of what we dealt with before to a degree. So anyway, it was one of those things where it felt like it was, there was someone, you know, like, hey, if you say this, or if you do this, it felt that way. Like, hey, don't attack each other. And I'm all for their strength in numbers, right? So don't get me wrong, like us coming together to attack. If you're saying, hey, let's come together and people that think similar, if we're, you know, people that believe in altcoins or crypto, and then there's Bitcoiners and then there's gold bugs and there's all these, libertarians, and there's all these people that are like in this camp together, which is, you're starting to get to be like a fairly big chunk of society, then like, I get that. And it's like, hey, we have to band together in the sense of being political or whatever. And I understand, and again, that kind of goes into my unpopular opinion, which we can talk more about at the end, but it felt a little bit odd. It felt a little odd, I guess, in a way. But again, I know people are going to have different stance on that. He was in prison for 10 years, for crying out loud. Like, his speech was phenomenal. It just overtly, it was just very, it was good. And it was very cool. I mean, I know a lot of people had tears in their eyes, and it was just cool to see that. But it just felt like it was just a lot of emphasis of like, we need to stand together. We need to be together. Instead of, you know, people fighting, which at the end of the day, that's what science is. Science is fighting and arguing, debating, and all this, you know, humans debating. That's what Bitcoin is. Bitcoin is fighting and debating. There's obviously the opportunist stuff that's been going on. There's all these things. That's what makes Bitcoin good, though, and anti-fragile, because society now, as people know, that's the reason we have snowflakes. You know, like people, the younger generations, which, you know, you and I are part of these generations where it's like you're under 40 or really anyone under 45. People don't know how to argue. They don't know how to communicate. They don't know how to debate. And that leads to very big problems in society, because communication, part of a sports team or a relationship, whatever it is, communication is the number one aspect of that relationship or of that team. If you can't communicate, you are screwed. And that's where we kind of find ourselves. Like, the younger generations cannot figure out how to communicate. They don't know how to voice their displeasure or voice their happiness or whatever it might be. And so we find ourselves in this world where everyone just kind of is glomming on to, you know, whatever the trend is, or, you know, you kind of know where I'm going with that. But anyway, it was interesting. It was, let's just say that it was interesting, an interesting speech.
Yeah. I completely agree. I think the speech was really good on one hand, fell flat on the other. It was awesome seeing Ross out of prison. Good for him. And kudos to the people who, you know, who were really involved in helping to make that happen. I was talking at dinner with some partners. Both of them worked in the prison system, and they were talking about how the prison system is a whole different world culture. It's not something that you can appreciate if you've never been there. And they're like, this guy, he wasn't on Google and like catching up on Bitcoin podcasts and, you know, all this stuff that like we take for granted, right? And so like for him to come out and not have an understanding of like, you know, the block size wars, like all, you know, all the things that, you know, the op return debate, all this stuff going on, not his fault. He's probably optimizing for time with his wife right now and, you know, loved ones. I agree though, you know, it did feel like, I think a call for unity. I wonder if it would have landed better at a different conference, like in BTC Prague, where like, you know, my understanding is it's a lot more middle of the fairway, Bitcoin only,
yes,
a lot less noise. If he would have talked about unity to a strictly Bitcoin audience, if maybe that had felt, you know, like, yes, I agree. Like, we need to argue, we need to debate. At the end of the day, though, we want Bitcoin to win, and let's, you know, do what we can together to make that happen. And that includes arguing and fighting as part of this sort of unifying force, which may sound paradoxical, but I think probably makes sense. Mm-hmm. What about, I feel like, the theme, besides stablecoins, which we'll get to in a minute, the other big theme are politicians. Mm-hmm. I think we had a governor of a representative and now governor candidate in Florida. We had obviously Cynthia Lummis, Beau Hines was there, JD Vance. Are you bullish on that? Do you like it? Does it bother you? How do you think about politicians coming to these sorts of things?
I can hear Eric Kasan yelling at me right now, the answer I'm about to give. So I'm empathetic to both sides, and I battle. The biggest battle I have, and maybe a lot of Bitcoiners, is this idealism versus pragmatism. And I've talked to a lot of people about this recently. And I know as an entrepreneur for 15 years, and as a Bitcoiner, I think we tend to get too idealistic and optimistic. Now, I caveat that with like, I think you need to be that way. And there's a good chunk of society that has to be that way, because that's generally the chunk of society that's pulling humanity forward. We have to mix that with pragmatism though at the same time. And that's I think the part that's, you're trying to, you know, balance, you know, logic and reason and first principles with this idealism of, you know, this is the way the world is going to be, this way. And for the average person, it's confusing as all hell, because they're just like, wait, like, what, can I use Bitcoin in a grocery store? Like, what are you talking about? Like, what do you mean it's the future? It's like, it's amazing. Like, I can't even use it. And we're living in like, Bitcoiners are living in like two different time, you know, warps, or like, you know, like back to the future. Like, we're on a time, different time, space time continuum. And so like, we live in the fiat world and the Bitcoin world at the same time, where like the average person's only in the fiat world. So they're kind of like, what do you mean? Like, what are you talking about? And so Bitcoiners have to like continually oscillate between these different worlds and these different minds, the logical versus logical and pragmatic versus idealistic and optimistic, where we're going and this is where we're headed. And then, because the average person only lives in like that one world and just like, hey, this is what life is. I can't even afford like $300 for like savings at all. It's like, what do you mean I need to buy Bitcoin? And that's the part that's very hard for, I think, Bitcoiners and many of us to kind of grasp is that. So that to me, I think is a big issue. And going back to this politics thing again, now we keep touching on like what my unpopular opinion is, but I think I have another one that I might have to switch to in a little bit at the end of the show. But
feel free to say it, and then you can circle back at the end if you need to, because okay. I don't want to hamstring your ability to just speak freely.
So to me, it's inevitable. Like I don't know if I have a way. Like I think overall it's good that politicians are in, because My big thought for years was that politicians would come in, and this goes back to, because it's permissionless money, that we want everyone in because it's going to change. I had this debate with George Gammon, like on a Twitter Spaces one day, and he's convinced that people will just revert back to, you know, another fourth turning from now. Like they'll just forget about Bitcoin, and like we'll just kind of like recreate the same problems in the past, which again, I'm empathetic. Like I can see that happening. And he's like, we just need to educate people more. He kept saying, like, we need to educate more people so they understand we can't go back into this. And my big thing was like, and this is where I will die on this hill, you cannot out-educate, out-propagandize the state. It's impossible. In this current system, with an unlimited currency printer, they will out-propagandize you every day of the week and twice on Sunday. It's impossible. And that's where, like, even you listen to his debates with Jeff Booth, they're along those same lines. I think he's even more close now, but he's still like kind of hung up on that. And I think that to me is, until you fix that part, and this is where I come back with the politicians, until you get politicians and incept the Bitcoin in their ethos, and hey, I own Bitcoin, and hey, oh, this is good for Bitcoin, and I need Bitcoin, and hey, whoa, my son has Bitcoin. I mean, we've even seen like, you know, Christine Lagarde, or you know, numerous people who are generally been anti-Bitcoin, and then all of a sudden, like their son has it, or the nephew has it, or whatever has, and then they start learning about it, or they start talking about it, or thinking about it, or whatever it is. And inevitably, like that comes around, because where I'm going with all this is that you only need a couple percent of society. Like, again, I am hell-bent on 3% of society needs to understand and be on fire for Bitcoin, and the world really changes at that point, because that's where the American Revolution. There's a book that I've outlined and hope to have it done by the end of the year. Not like a long book, probably like 100 pages or something like that. But it's about Bitcoin and the American Revolution, and using that as an example of, there's only a couple percent of people that were in on the revolution. Like there was, most people were not involved. They were fighting against the Patriots. They were tattletaling on them, you know, pointing them out like, hey, you know, that type of thing. And a couple of people stood up and said, I'm not taking this anymore. I'm not doing this. I literally will die on this hill. We pledge our lives, our fortunes, our sacred honor. And I will change things. And the other 97% stood there and did nothing. And then slowly people kind of came along. But the other 97% won, though, at the end of the day, because they got the Bill of Rights. They got the Constitution. They won, even though they didn't even take part in it. It was a couple guys who stood up and grabbed their muskets and said, no more. And that's exactly what I believe is happening with Bitcoin. Most people are not going to get what we get. They're not going to believe what we believe. It's going to be the radical minority of people who are like, I'm not taking this anymore. Like I'm plugged in, I'm wired in, and I know what's going on. I know most of you aren't, but this is what's going to happen. And life is just full of that. Most people are passengers in life. They're extras in their own movie, as one of my favorite, you know, personal development guys, Bob Proctor, would always say. Like most people are extras in their own movie of life. And there's a few people in life, a few percent, that say, that's not how this works. I will not accept that. This is the direction we're going. And you can go from, you know, everywhere. This is just, history's littered with a few people standing up and saying, no, this is not going to happen. So I think it's inevitable. The politicians are coming. I believe we want them in. I know there's the ethos of, we want the pleb to have as much as possible. I mean, in all fairness, it's been 16 years. The plebs have been able to get what they want and I mean, how much more time is like a certain amount of time we need to give people, like 100 years? I don't know. Like, I don't know what it is. I mean, it's the freest and open market we've ever had, Bitcoin. So everyone's had the chance to get it. And that's what, you know, people like all of us trying to educate people, going back to the noise and the signal in the beginning of the story. That's what is frustrating, because you're trying to get the plebs on board. You're trying to go, but at some point, the BlackRocks are coming. The Chase banks are coming. These are things we've all talked about for years and tried to talk to other people about and educate them. Hey guys, this is what's going to happen. And you probably should study it. You probably should get a little bit, like you said, get off zero and get in the game. And then you've got people complaining and saying, well, let's go. It's assuming the same people that have it. And, oh, you know, it's like, well, of course, that's how life works. And so to deny that, I feel like, is to go against reality and what that is. I like it because it's the Trojan horse to me, at least. And maybe I'm too idealistic, but I feel like it's the Trojan horse entering the city walls, the gates. And now we're starting to get somewhere where now we're getting the horse inside the gates. And now we're really going to party. Like now things are really going to start happening, because the shenanigans are still going to go on, but like people are going to blow themselves up. Is Chase Bank going to blow themselves up someday? Maybe. Like I have no idea. Maybe they will. Maybe they'll FTX themselves. Someone that this will not be the last time, or FTX and Celsius, that won't be the last time this happens. And my thing with coming back full circle now to the George Gammon thing is, you cannot really educate people. You can't go like, hey, I'm in a government school system and I'm going to out-educate the state. They're always going to propagandize against you unless you get them incentivized to want Bitcoin and to like Bitcoin. And now you start reversing the tide somehow and re-incentivizing society to go back the other direction. Otherwise, we'll just keep going that same way. And the only way that I know is to get the horse, the Trojan horse, into the gates somehow and start changing the incentive structure. Because until that changes, I don't see anything changing. I don't know how else we would end up doing this unless someone has a better idea. So I think that the politicians, it's inevitable. It's been 16 years. And the fact that it's happened that quick actually is maybe a different story to talk about. How it's pretty amazing how fast it's happened. But again, that's, I think, part of why a lot of us are in it, though. We can see with technology and how fast communication spreads now. It took hundreds and hundreds of years for gold to become that standard, because people had to walk across the earth, you know, or use a horse. Now we have communication instantaneously with anybody. So now people are learning this much faster. And even though it seems like it's going slow, it's going extremely quick. And we're in the process of that transition, of this monetary transition right now. And politicians are going to be a huge part of that. And we can talk more about the politicians, but being active in politics, again, a lot of Bitcoiners don't want to be active in politics or haven't wanted to. A lot of libertarians haven't wanted to for years. I mean, since I was a young kid, a lot of them wouldn't vote. Always was beyond me of why. And again, we can get into does your vote count and all these shenanigans. But the fact is, if 1% of society went to their local PTA meetings, went to their board meetings, went locally, and I'm not talking like, again, like when you have one election, like the president of the United States, we weren't even meant to be that way. So like, I can take your argument of like, this doesn't matter. You know, why am I even voting? Well, then why aren't you on your school board? Why aren't you in the local city council? Like, if 1% of people like that actually cared and actually had truth on their side, were founding the founding principles, they were Bitcoiners, 1% of those people were like, or they made up 1% or a couple percent of every single local municipality or every county in America. Can you imagine what kind of place we would have if that was the case? But we don't. Most people just sit on their hands and don't do anything. They're like, well, I'm not going to be part of politics. Like, oh, it's all corrupt, blah, blah. Well, yeah, because we've let all the corrupt people just do it. So anyway, I could talk for hours about that, but that's...
No. I sympathize with a lot of what you say. I'm a hardcore libertarian. Yep. And but to your point of like the idealism versus the pragmatism, right now governments do exist. I think to the extent that we can influence local politics is way more important than federal. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't get excited seeing J.D. Vance,
right,
or Cynthia Lummis, same, whatever. I don't want a strategic reserve because it's stolen money that they're using to buy,
correct,
Bitcoin,
yeah,
from
a whole
people who
talk.
Understand,
yeah, yeah,
Bitcoin,
yeah,
less, yeah, than you and I.
Yes.
But yeah, you know, I think your point's a good one. Like, you know, for example, like I live on some land now, so no HOA, but previously, I conceded to the rules that the HOA had set out, yep, when I moved into a subdivision. And that's fine because I'm electing to be a part. I'm opting into that in a very, freely and, yep, in a level of very close proximity.
Yes.
Now the further you get away from that, you know, think the federal government, like very far away from that, having unelected bureaucrats, even elected bureaucrats who are, you know, still not operating in my interest because I didn't vote for them, or 50% of people didn't vote for them or whatever, is I think where I have an issue with like the engage the politicians thing. Mm-hmm. For me, it's just like, yes, it was inevitable. I completely agree. But that doesn't, I don't need to cheer them on. Like, I'm not looking for government to pump my bags, yes. right? Like, I think my bags are going to be pumped because Bitcoin's going to win in a global free market for all of the attributes it possesses.
Absolutely.
I think the over-enthusiasm of big name politicians being there is maybe what annoys me. It'd be way cooler, honestly, if they had like, you know, I think, is it Dom Bays, you know, working mm-hmm. out in, I don't know if you know him, he's out in Southern California, I think. And like,
yeah.
Yeah, like yep. he's doing this stuff in like a much more localized way, yes. and it's like, hey, like, yeah, I get it. Like he and many other people would benefit from engaging like this more local community. I think it's maybe the labor unions out there. We'd all benefit from our township or, you know, our city or whatever in a way that I don't think we benefit in, because I don't trust big government anyway. And so I don't know what their plans are for Bitcoin, like, but I bet you anything, it's not for it to be used as peer-to-peer electronic cash.
Yep.
That seems pretty likely to me. So, yeah, I have my reluctance. So, hey, the other topic, and this is brought up by politician after politician as a segue, stablecoins. Why don't you just generally give me your... Did you see that video someone shared? They're like, look at all the stuff about Bitcoin I learned at the Bitcoin conference. And it's like a 1 or 2 minute clip of like stablecoins. Just like speaker after speaker talking about stablecoins.
Yeah. And so, it's funny because like, I agree with everything that you're just saying. And it's funny because like everyone has their own nuance to it. And because like I'm 100% aligned with what you just said. And even though some people might say like, oh, you guys just said like competing things, they're not. I mean, like to me, it's all localized politics. That's the most important thing. That's how the country was started. That's why we became an exceptional country, or one of the reasons it became an exceptional country was because of that. It was because we weren't this top-down structure. It was 50 unique states and you're really governed by your municipality and your state at most. And so we need to get back to that. To me, it was how do we revert those incentives, though? Because I just don't know anyway. Other than like a massive event happening, like a civil war or something like that. Like, I don't know what else we can re-incentivize this structure to like flip it upside down, other than the Bitcoin Trojan horse getting into maybe the biggest gates in the world, which we'll say maybe are these big nation states right now. But again, I could be wrong. And so that's this thing. But anyway, the stablecoin thing. It's interesting. Obviously they all have this talking point of it's going to extend dollar dominance and yada, yada, yada. Again, to me, it doesn't do anything. Like it's easy for the people in emerging markets, obviously, to use it, and which is great. And that's phenomenal. And that's the world. This is the world we live in. So this is this game we kind of keep coming back to, like the idealism versus pragmatism. That's the world we're in. I don't think it changes much because, again, I think people are going to blow themselves up. These things are still going to happen. Bitcoin is going to be the thing that people realize over time. And again, when I say over time, like I think this is a 5, 10, 15 year game that plays out. Like, and I see, and this is like the demographic shift, I think, is one of the biggest things that no one talks about at all. I mean, the baby boomers, the silent generation is, you know, pretty old at this point. The boomers are becoming older and they're sunsetting from society, in the sense of they are leaving the halls of power in the next 5 years, 10 years. Well, what do we think that change looks like? I mean, with AI, with 3D printing and the older generation, we'll say the boomers leaving power, that's a radically different world. And I would just advise anyone to, hey, take a couple of minutes, just think about the world we're gonna live in 10 years from now, you know, early to mid 2030s. It is going to look so radically different. Not in the sense we're gonna have flying cars, even though we might, flying drones or, you know, taxi drones or stuff like that, but it's going to look so different just from like who's running the country. And so like what's happening, like will the 401k exist, you know, like Social Security, all these things are very antiquated. And that's where the younger generations are like, these are bankrupt. These are completely bankrupt. We know the government admits they're bankrupt. They won't exist in 10 years. Now they will in theory of, hey, we promised you $1,000 a month. You're going to get $1,000 a month. But oh, by the way, a carton of eggs is $100 a carton, you know, or whatever. It's like, you're going to get what you're promised, but there's going to be worth nothing. And that's the thing, this game that's playing out. And it's the game that this demographic thing that, again, no one really talks about anywhere at all. You get like maybe a Harry Dent, you know, once in a while, I see like Harry Dent pop his face up in a podcast somewhere. He'd be yelling and screaming about demographics. And he's been doing that for 20 years. And so like that to me is the most fascinating thing, because anyone who thinks this is not coming, like Bitcoin's not going to take over, you need to take a step back and kind of look where the world's going. The younger generations ain't going back to fiat. They're not going to gold. Like these things are antiquated. They're things of the past. They don't work. The younger generation has been watching everyone above them, seeing them getting screwed over and over and over and over, you know, with .com and then 08 and then 2020. They're like, what are you people doing? And so that's where like, that's why like the, and I'm tangenting and I'll come back to this, but that's why like a lot, like they're lazy. The younger generation, like no, they're just opting out. Like they're not playing part of this system anymore. And as this education grows of Bitcoin, they're going to realize, oh, this is the new system that if I go to work for somebody, then I can actually save my time and energy, and I can, and this goes back to the politician thing. This is again where I always give the Apple example, and sorry, I'm bouncing around a little bit right now, but the Apple,
no, you're good.
I always give the, like if Apple had been selling their iPhones for, I used to say 1,000 Bitcoin, but even one Bitcoin, like if they were selling it for one Bitcoin 10 years ago and they would do it of just, you know, so about 2015. So yeah, I guess theoretically they could have, they're $500 or you would say $500 or $1,000 per Bitcoin at that time. And if they would have been selling them for one Bitcoin and they were selling each one, now at this point with Bitcoin at $100,000, what do you think Apple would be doing? They wouldn't be scamming their customers and, you know, effing the battery up and doing all this crazy stuff to like try to get more fiat. They'd be like, dude, we're so far ahead of the next company in wealth, like 10,000 times ahead by orders of magnitude, that we don't need to actually sell more iPhones. We can just produce an even better customer experience. And people think they're good now, but just imagine if they had that much Bitcoin where they were so wealthy that they could, you know, whatever it is. But then extrapolate that out to all the companies. And this is where I go back to like the politician thing, where you start to have better incentives, where instead of, you know, and it's not to say humans won't do bad things and people with wealth wouldn't do bad things, but across the board of society, if everyone's on the same plane, where everyone has an equal chance, not an equal, you know, not an equal outcome, but an equal opportunity where, hey, I'm a doctor, hey, I'm at McDonald's, and I can still save in the hardest money known to man. And if the guy is McDonald's, he saves more over the course of the year. He saves one Bitcoin, but the doctor spends everything and then has nothing at the end of the year. Well, the guy in 5-10 years, like that McDonald's worker is going to be wealthier than the doctor. And he already is on day one or year one. But we can see where this starts going, where the incentives start changing over time. And that to me is like, this goes back to, again, to the stablecoin thing, where people think that the dollar, it's still the dollar, you know, it's still backed by U.S. treasuries. Like people are already not wanting U.S. treasuries. You have countries dumping treasuries, China, you know, Japan, all these countries are like, yeah, we don't want this fake currency anymore. Like get your trash out of here. And that's only going to speed up. That's why I brought up the demographics and kind of went through this whole loop, because the younger generations, they see the game that's being played, even though they're like, they couldn't explain it to you necessarily. They know the game inherently that's being played on them, and they're not opting into that system. So the stablecoin thing might could extend it a little bit, or it could be like, make it easier for some emerging countries, which is great. I hope it does make it easier for people in these other places to do that for a little bit, or at least, you know, at least makes their life easier at some point somehow for a little while. But Bitcoin will be that thing that totally exposes the ills of fiat, and stablecoins are just a part of that system, and just it kind of extending that. So not to say they don't have a purpose or a place, or maybe they won't exist, you know, even 10 or 50, 100 years from now, but I really do think that Bitcoin will just continue to kind of eat into all these asset classes, and will make, I would imagine at some point, these stablecoins really, you know, somewhat useless. I don't know if they'll ever go away to the extent of like, will fiat ever completely go away? I think it just kind of goes to zero and then kind of comes back. We saw it with Zimbabwe. We've seen a lot of these places where they, or was it Venezuela? Like they've had, you know, 5 currency crises in the last like 30 years. Well, here we are with another fiat currency again. So governments aren't going to like give that away necessarily, just like super incredibly easy, unless to your point, the nation states just dissolve and go away and they break apart, which I don't know if that happens in our lifetimes. I mean, it could. I think there are black swans and a lot of big things that will happen in our lifetimes, but to what extent that happens, that's to be seen. But I do think the stable coins will be something that are probably around for a while, but they're this maybe UBI like use case where it's just kind of like, hey, whoever's using this government currency still, like, sure, people are swapping in and out, or, you know, and then they're putting it in Bitcoin or whatever it is. But I think that it's overblown. I think it's just a way for, I think it's a way for politicians right now to kind of show support for Bitcoin to honestly, or like try to get into that world without getting into that world. It's kind of like, ooh, stable coins. Like, yeah, it's kind of like, it's still the dollar, guys. Like, don't worry. Like, and then it's just the Overton window, right? It's the Overton window kind of like moving. And then like, okay, here, I mean, who in their bingo card have people, politicians talking about stable coins 5 years ago or any of this stuff or Bitcoin for that matter. So, and now we're seeing at the state levels, you start seeing it a little bit at the city levels, which you haven't seen much of yet, but I'm trying to talk to my city and a couple cities around here of like, hey, you can have the entire world fund your projects. You just get into Bitcoin right now. Start putting a little bit into Bitcoin. You can have people on the other side of the world funding your projects. So like, let's get on board now, because 20 years from now, it's going to be a little too late. So.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting thought. I think my concern with stable coins, first of all, the fact that it was so front and center at the Bitcoin conference to me went a little bit back to our initial thoughts on the conferences, just a lot of other stuff. I will say, so one, sort of unpopular opinion, I'm pretty hardcore. I think most of what I say probably pisses a lot of Bitcoiners off. One thing that I think I probably fall a little bit, not in the middle of the road, but just, I think that stable coins do have a utility for many people around the world today. Maybe not for me, maybe not for anyone, for a few people in America. I mean, it's faster rails maybe, but like, it's still just a dollar, right? But there are a lot of people in third world countries, can't afford a hardware wallet, are living paycheck to paycheck, can't save.
Right.
They're not buying Bitcoin because they literally are trying to feed their family the next day. And for them to be able to swap into a better, form of shitty currency like the dollar, is a lifesaver. So I, without a bank like that, that's, I understand the utility of that. And those people are willing to make major trade-offs in order to be able to do that. For example, I think stable coins are, like an inch from being activated as a CBDC, or certainly could be. I think that's a real risk that you could have. And, I don't know if you saw this, I haven't looked into it yet, but I saw like Palantir is going to be like creating some massive database on all American,
like 2 days ago. Yeah.
Yeah. And so this is a Trump administration. Right. Imagine if it was a Harris administration, right? And we're one, 4 year cycle from an AOC administration. So dear God, if that's the direction we're headed with, collection of data on Americans, imagine what they want to do with the money. And so I think the implications of stable coins, is beneficial as they might be for many, many potentially billions of people around the world, are a privacy and sovereignty nightmare, I think, for a lot of people. And so to the extent that you can stay out of them, it also concerns me, because I maybe we disagree on this, it kind of sounded like we do, is I think they could extend the dollar's lifeline in a way. And again, ideologically, I don't like that. Mm-hmm. Pragmatically, maybe, as we kind of migrate onto a Bitcoin standard, like having some stability with kind of this, more progressional move to Bitcoin from stable coins. Maybe there's a benefit to that. I just have my concerns about like the privacy implications and what that means for, because a lot of people are just going to adopt it. They're like, oh, cool. I can send it, 24/7, 365 and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah. And now they know everything that you're buying and doing and when you're transacting.
Yep.
We're already close enough to that with credit cards and bank account, that like, I don't think it's like a massive shift in the wrong direction because we're already so bad, but I think it makes it easier is kind of my concern, if that makes sense.
No, 100%. No, we are aligned on that. I think I'm open either way. Like I either think that I don't have a hard and fast opinion on how the stable coins extend the dollar dominance or not. Like I could see it going either way. I could see it all failing in 5 years from now, or I could see it being another 50, 100 years and it extends it. I really don't have, to me, like you said, it's just an extension of what we already have to a large extent. Does it make it more? Is there more CBDC potential to it? I mean, there could be for sure. And because any of this is like, if it's capturable or controllable or whatever it is, then yeah, absolutely. And to me, that's going back to the beginning again, the signal versus the noise. That's how you know Bitcoin is really the only option for humans. If you just want freedom and you just want to be left alone and then like have society incentivized towards merit and accountability, responsibility, Bitcoin is far and away the only answer. I mean, by far. I mean, right there, the signal is why does this, stable coins weren't even like a thing. And all of a sudden, like, I feel like a month in or like maybe so a couple months ago, whatever it was, like February, all of a sudden, like David Sachs, like they're just talking about stable coins. And I was like, whoa, like stable coins were never a part of any of this. And now all of a sudden they've just been like you said, thrust into this conversation. And just kind of like the crypto stuff was, it was like, no, this is just Bitcoin. Like, and then there's like, oh, crypto reserve. And then it was like, well, now we have stable coins. And I was like, wait, why are we? So that to me, I always go back to like, what is your enemy doing? You know, like, what is Vladimir Putin doing? I don't hear Vladimir Putin saying, you know what, I'm creating an XRP thing. You know, like I'm doing, or Xi's not like, oh, you know what, we've got a, you know, Cardano ledger. And like, we're going to have this Cardano reserve. And like, we're going to settle trade in Cardano and XRP and ETH. Like, how come that's never the case? Right there, that's one way. But there's many ways to say, hey, what's the signal? And how do I triangulate truth? That's one bullet point of like, what are my enemies doing? What are people outside of this that maybe that are trying to take me over, trying to, I'm not even saying physically, right? But like, they're trying to get economically ahead of us or whatever it is. If they're doing these things, then maybe I should pay attention. You know, like maybe I should see what's going on. I always thought it was fascinating. This is a complete side tangent, but like similar to this, what we're talking about is like 15 years ago, I was at Michigan State University for graduation. It was one of my family members graduating. And in the thing, all the American students were in like finance, MBAs, like, you know, I'm a lawyer, whatever the heck. And then all the kids that were basically international students, well, they were all in agriculture. They were all like in food, like things were actually like the primary, as you think of, you know, like primary or net. I'm trying to think of what the three levels are, primary, tertiary. And then I forget the last, like the top level, that's like all, they're all derivatives of like the actual primary thing. And I'm like looking at the program and like 15 years ago, I'm like, no one's looking at this, are they? Like, I was like, no one sees this. Like no one cares. Like, no. Then here we are 15 later. It's like, well, we need to like make things here in America. And like now supposedly that's what we're trying to do with Trump and like what's all going on. Like they're trying to like get it all back here. And it's not to say that he's not going the right direction. I mean, whatever it is, what it is, but it's like, guys, how could we not see this? So the moral of this whole story is, you can see like, why is Bitcoin Magazine, why are they pushing these other things so hard? Why are the politicians, which like you said, the politicians aren't really for us. Their number one job is to get elected and their second job is to get reelected. So that's where like this nuance comes in. And that's what's so hard for the average person to understand, like, hey, use a politician as far as you can throw them. That's it. Like they're not for you, whether it's at the top or it's local, like they're not actually for you. Like they're there to gain power and control because the fiat system's design has been incentivizes them to just have power and control because that's how they feel importance. And that's, as the founding fathers knew, that's who was attracted to positions like that. People that wanted power over other human beings. Like this is, you know, read Machiavelli, read history. This is how this works. And that's why, like you said, you have to limit the government in small and focus on the local stuff. But I don't know, like the stablecoin thing, it could extend it. Maybe it doesn't. I'm of the mindset that whatever it does end up happening, like Bitcoin is the signal and it will take it over at some point. I think sooner than later, because people will continue seeing dumb things happen. We're going to see more Canadian trucker incidents. We're going to see more Dutch farmers. These things will continue to happen and people will start, you know, they'll chunk their way over, like little chunks of the population will keep coming over towards Bitcoin and be like, ah, this is a signal within all this noise. And again, why is Silicon Valley or why is, you know, Wall Street, maybe a little bit, you can say maybe they're coming to Bitcoin a little bit or whatever, some of these politicians, but in general, why it's been so obvious for so long for so many people, you know, millions of people around the world with Bitcoin, but why is it taking so long? And now why are we pushing stablecoins? Why are we pushing these other crypto things? That to me is the signal that it's like the contrast. It's like, that's the signal of saying, oh, these people who aren't, you know, they have other incentives to keep power or to make more fiat, whatever it is. So they're pushing these other things. That just reaffirms like, oh yeah, Bitcoin is, of course, that is the right thing to do. But for whatever reason, there's a lot of people that put credence into these, you know, the Paul Krugmans of the world, these fake economists and, you know, fake politicians. And they put credence in like, look up them and say, oh, what are you saying today? And like, oh, okay. Like I guess stablecoin is the next thing. That it's just wild to me. Wild.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. And did you see, so I guess I didn't see the announcement. I guess Pakistan announced at the conference that they're going to adopt like a strategic reserve or something. Yeah. And just within a day, the IMF came after them. And I'm like, okay, it's not the nation state adoption that's a signal to me so much.
Right.
It's the fact that the IMF is going after them and saying, exactly. Don't do that. You know, it's like we need control. But okay, what about, dude, there's a lot of talk these days about Bitcoin lending products. So don't sell your Bitcoin. I had, CJ Constantinos of People's Reserve on the podcast that we just launched, shared last week. Yep. And Jack Mahler's is talking, they're getting interest rates down sub 10%. I'm going to let you give your opinion first. I'll give my opinion, and then I want your thoughts on my opinion, unless we happen to completely agree.
Again, it's one of those things where I've been really, as you can tell, I've been really battling this idealistic versus pragmatic side. And so I'll say this, you get more bees with honey than you do vinegar. I played hockey as a son of a bitch. Like, that's the way I played hockey. I was of the mindset of like, it's intimidation. I'm going to run you over. And that's how I was like most of my life. In the last like number of years, I have maybe softened a little bit or whatever it is. And I lean more towards like, hey, I you can't have as many enemies. You got to try to make more friends than you do enemies. And it was always, I mean, off the ice, I was always good, but it was like, that was my mentality of like, I'm right. We're going the right direction. Follow me. And in business and in life, you can't take that approach that I did on the rink as much. So it's one of those things where 15 years I've really had to learn. In saying all of that, this is a tough one. This is a tough one. The lending products, man. You really got some good questions here today. I'll say that. I do think overall, number one, that means I think it's good for lending for seller pressure. It's going to reduce sell pressure. Again, price is going to go up because of this. Now, are people going to degen and do ridiculous things, take out, big loans and things like that? Oh yeah, probably people get blown up. Stuff like that. Again, pain's a good teacher. And free market, free market's going to free market. I do think overall that, again, kind of like the politicians, it's inevitable. It doesn't mean you can't educate on one way or another. And this goes back to the XRP, all that stuff. People are like, why can't you just let the free market decide? Well, we are the free market. Like, I am the free market. Michael is a free market. And I'm free to educate people and say, hey, your coin is a scam, or you shouldn't be doing this, or whatever it is. So that is the free market deciding. The lending side of things, again, I don't know. I don't know if I have a strong opinion on it. I think overall it's going to be, I thought it was going to become a massive thing this cycle. Like a year or two ago, I was expecting a lot of big lending things to happen, because just from the aspect of there's a lot, like the threshold of the amount of Bitcoiners and the people that got in, say in 2017, 2018, and then 2020, 2021, the amount of people that got in those bull runs, it seemed to me just intuition and gut feel, and then seeing the numbers climb, obviously in conjunction with that, of, man, I think there's going to be some people with some wealth that are going to be saying, hey, I want to unlock this, or, hey, I've got an idea that I'm going to do X, Y, Z. That really felt like this cycle, we are going to see more of that. And I think that maybe we're just seeing the beginning of it a little bit, like it's going to happen a little bit more over the next year or two. But overall, my nuanced answer is, I think it's good for the people that can handle it, but not for the people who can't handle it. And I know it's kind of a weird answer, but I've seen a lot of people that can't control debt, and I've seen a lot of people that can control debt. But the rehypothecation part of it, that's the part that I mean, technically speaking, I don't know enough about, and I'm not good enough with like the proof of reserves and just technically like, hey, I'm going to go scour and make sure all these things are good. I've always taken just like the risk mitigation approach, is like, hey, if you're going to do, because I came from the real estate world too, like where we would raise money, and you take on debt, buy a house or buy an apartment with none of your own money. So I'm pretty used to stuff like that. And that's where like I have a nuanced opinion, where I'm used to taking on debt and managing all these things, but the average person is not. And that's why I came to Bitcoin, ironically, because I saw the world that I came from, where I was like, whoa, like this is insane. Like what I'm having to do just to like go acquire a property, the amount of time, energy, man hours, capital, just to acquire an investment property, the average guy, they can't do this. Like that's not how life is meant to be. Like, oh, I've got to do, thousands of hours of stuff and have all this capital and raise money, et cetera. And just in order to get ahead in life, that's when it really, that's when it really became obvious in 2017, 18, 19 for me of this is not how life's meant to be. Like I shouldn't be having to do all this just to try to like bite, scratch and claw and get ahead. The guy working at the tire shop or working McDonald's or even the lawyer or whoever down the street, you shouldn't have to like, be an investment manager and do your real job. So I thought the lending stuff would come this cycle, but it's nuanced because people are going to be able to handle it and they're not. I don't know if I have like an answer in the sense of like, no, I absolutely don't think we should have anything like that. I mean, if they're not rehypothecating and they're doing things on the up and up and they can prove like what's happening, then, you know, I don't know. But I would love to hear your answer, though.
Yeah. So I'm not sure we're real far off. I would say to start, I mean, the way that anytime I hear about a fiat sort of product on Bitcoin, I'm immediately like, you know, red flags, concerned, mm-hmm. don't like it. We want to replace the system yep. and not supplement it. Or, you know, I'm a hardcore Bitcoin maxi. Yes. And actually, one of our founders, Tony, put out a video just maybe this past week about basically warning people about these lending products. And mm-hmm. I think he and I are generally aligned on like the yeah. concerns. I think maybe my opinion probably has a little bit of nuance around, well, first of all, I agree with you, free market, if people demand the product, you know, so on and so forth. I totally agree with Tony on the warning he's giving. I think that where I'm maybe still smoothing the edges out of my opinion is, while I don't plan on using one of these products, certainly they have the right to exist. I think that there are going to be bad actors. And I, by the way, not accusing Jack Mahlers or CJ or any of those sorts of guys of being bad actors. I think they are providing a product to the marketplace that they see an obvious demand for, or will find out very soon if there's an obvious and large scale demand for. And they're trying to help people not sell their Bitcoin at yep. the end of the day. And you know, I get that. I think where you and I agree, I agree fervently, is there are a lot of people who are going to get wrecked because they are under collateralizing to the extent that they can. And that's one thing I'll give CJ credit for, is my sense. And again, I'm not a finance guy, so I'm still figuring this stuff out. People's Reserve is like the only way to work with them is super conservatively.
Correct.
Jack's product yep. to me feels like, hey, we don't do a credit check, you know, whatever. We just, yeah, I have your Bitcoin. So send, you know, that makes it a lot. Now, this is not a knock on Jack. I mean, he's trying to make the product accessible. And it's not his fault if people lose their Bitcoin because they took out a loan they shouldn't. Mm-hmm. But it does open the door for many more people who aren't good at math, very bad at risk management, to get wrecked. And I think a lot of people will. I think if you have a massive Bitcoin stash, you've got really safe and secure cash flow, you know, you understand what you're getting into, maybe you've worked in finance or something, or just, you know, understand what's going on. I think some of those people are going to come out ahead on the back end because they're just able to manage it accordingly. I think the issue, I agree with you on like proof of reserves. I think the issue that any sorts of products like this that most people have still is even like a guy who can do the math, and, you know, we're so accustomed to counterparty risk, especially when it applies to like custody of our assets. We use banks, we use brokers, you know, all these things. And like, we never have that. Many people discount the importance of understanding what it means when you give the keys to your Bitcoin to someone else, you know? And because it's not just the risk of loss or hack or whatever, though that risk is obvious and it exists, but it's also, what if there's a 6102? Well, no, that would never happen. Well, it did 100 years ago, less than 100 years ago, and could happen again. And if the, you know, government, who doesn't want Bitcoin to be money, feels threatened, like, why couldn't it happen again? We got a giant honeypot at Coinbase. Now we're going to have a giant honeypot at, you know, Nijdegger. I can't remember where Jack Mahlers and Strike are custodying. But like, those risks are non-zero. And that's fine if you want to take them. Again, free market. But understand, it's not just, do I have safe cash flow and enough collateral and I could, you know, navigate a 50% dip in the price of Bitcoin. It's also all of those other things. Mm-hmm. And so I fear for a lot of people getting wrecked. Again, I think some people will come out ahead, do it very, you know, safely with a small amount of their stack. They'll keep most in self-custody. Most people, okay, I can empathize. Like, you know, don't sell your Bitcoin. Good for you. But I think it's just generally a trend toward like the financialization of Bitcoin that I'm like, you know, I don't like it. I want Bitcoin to replace the financial system. Hope my optimistic side is like, maybe this is a messy transition step that we just need. But I'm not hopeful for a lot of people who are going to lose big, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you say that. So I think we're, our paths cross, or like when I say I've softened a little bit over the years, because I was very ardently, you know, just idealistic for a long time of like, this is the way life needs to be, and this is the way life's going to be. And when I say soften, I don't mean like soften in the sense of like, well, like go back on your principles or morals. I just mean I've softened my stance on the pragmatism side of like, hey, God's going to control, like, hey, God, like, it's out of my hands. Like, I don't know what else to do. I've been down this road for 20 years. I've been yelling at people and screaming at people about the founding fathers and the Constitution, the Bill of Rights and the Bitcoin white paper. No one seems to listen to me. It's like, it's in your hand. Doesn't mean I'm going to stop what I'm doing because I feel like I'm called to do this and educate people. But it's what do they call it? Code switching. Like when I talk to a regular person, it's different than how I would talk to you or a Bitcoiner. Like for a Bitcoiner, I think I lighten my approach. I soften my approach in the sense of like, hey, you got to meet normies where they are, you know? And but then when I talk to a regular person, it's like, hey, watch this. Like exactly what you said. Watch the ills of this. And so I think that's part of this nuance that I believe Bitcoiners have to kind of come to. And that's where like you do have like these two segments of people. And even the opportunist stuff is kind of like this two world, like we just saw it where people are kind of splitting off. And that's where the unity, it's funny because that's where the unity thing comes in with Ross Ulbricht, obviously. Like I didn't like the undertones of it. Maybe it was the wrong place, like you said, to do it. However, at the same time, I do think it is different the way you talk to like a Bitcoiner versus the way you talk to someone who's not a Bitcoiner. Like they're trying to understand and learn it. To me, that's where you're kind of like, hey, Bitcoin's the thing. You got to study Bitcoin, study it. This is a system. This is the new system we're going to have. And then with a Bitcoiner, it's like, hey, we can't just beat people over the face and just like tell them they're idiots and like they're dumb as shit for like going somewhere else. We have to meet them where they are and be like, hey, if you're getting introduced to this product or whatever it is, like be super careful. Like at the end of the day, that's where I've kind of like come off my pedestal in the sense of like, I don't know, people are going to do what they're going to do. Like, I mean, shoot, it's been almost 10 years, maybe 8 years of me talking about this. And, I mean, I talked to Pierre recently and he was like, dude, when I got in 2012 or 2013, he's like, I thought everyone realized like that year, was like, boom, like we're going to the moon. Like this whole system is going to flip. And like, boom, he's like, here we are. And so like, you kind of have this, like, I don't know what to do. Like where it's like, you stay ardent on your beliefs, but you have to talk to people differently depending on who they are and where they are. I guess that's, hopefully that helps people of where I'm coming from. There's another point I had, which I can't remember what it is. I'll probably remember it in a minute about this, but that to me is where it's this nuance of kind of who you're talking to and how we're speaking about it. Because yeah, I think it's an important distinction to make because it's like you said, I don't know these actors. I don't know, you know, what their plan is or what they're doing, but oh, this was the other part. So I've softened also. So my softened had two things. There's nuance on who you're talking to, but also my stance and softening of like, of how I approach it is I'm kind of to the point of like, I've removed, so maybe softened's not the right word. I've stepped back on the sense of, I think it's just the 3%. Like, I don't think, going back to the George Gammon thing, I don't think most people are going to get Bitcoin. They don't even understand the system we're in now. Most, I mean, that's why we're in this system is because the vast majority of people have no idea the system that's being played on them in the game, fiat game, central banking. So to me, I look at that, I'm like, well, shoot. I mean, I don't know how many people are ever going to get Bitcoin. So to me, that's why, like on our show, I've been asking people, like, do you think it's just going to be a couple percent of people like dragging the rest of society, kind of like the American Revolution, or do you think 10%, 50%, 85% of people are going to get Bitcoin someday? And they're like, yes, Bitcoin, like that's our thing. To me, I've regressed back to like, I just think it's going to be a couple percent of people and we're going to have painful events that keep moving society, the Overton window back to, again, like 16 years in, like we're educating. And again, it's not a long time really. So it's not that long actually that we've been doing this. But at the same time, there's so much information, there's so much noise out there though, too, to your initial points, that people get caught up in all this. And at some point, I mean, what orange pill what events have orange pilled people more than anything? I mean, it was the Canadian truckers, so people getting their bank account censored. It was the Dutch farmer. It was the, you know, Russia being pulled off the Swiss system and the war starting. All these terrible events, which I hope and pray we don't have any more of these things. Unfortunately, we live in life trying to be pragmatic where pain's a great teacher. I come back to the thing my father's always said. It's like pain's a great teacher. And at the end of the day, we keep educating. We keep doing what we're doing. It's exactly what you guys do all the time. And it's, hey, people with the eyes to see and the ears to hear will come. I don't know. Like, is everyone else just going to have to get run over a couple of times by the bus going down the street before they realize like, maybe I should go do what these guys are saying over here. Hopefully that makes sense. And that's like where my nuance or like I've come back like a step and being like, you know what? Like, I don't know. So like Pierre said it to me like a month or two ago and I've just kind of like laughed because I was kind of like, yeah, that's kind of like what I've been thinking too of like, I don't know, man. People are just gonna have to get run over. And I don't know what to tell you anymore. So I don't know. What are your thoughts?
No, hey, you managed to bring that back full circle. So I think I might have stolen the unpopular opinion out of you, or feel free to share that in black and white terms, or if you've got a new one that you want to throw out there, either way.
No, I mean, so my unpopular opinion was really, I think we kind of really encapsulated all of it. I do think it's going to be, I had a couple things written down, and it's gradually and suddenly, but in that true sense. But I think we're already in the gradually phase. We're already in this process. I think a lot of people are waiting for it to just be like the iceberg flips overnight. But I think it just happens more of like with a whimper and not a bang. I think these things happen. Like even the black swan events, I think things will happen, but only like certain segments of society move over. And that's where you go back to like educating politicians and like trying to incept them in a local level. Like my biggest thing would be, like we said earlier, is to have like 1% of people, in Bitcoin, like they're all in their own little locale, like part of the PTA or part of, their local, whatever HOA. Like if one or two people, every Bitcoiner was like involved in once a year, I mean, just think of like once a year, what would happen? And that's where then you go back to, okay, well, that's a big ask. I can't tell everyone to go do that. Right. So and that's where I know a lot of people, or we know a lot of people, I'm sure, that they're orange pilling President Trump. They're trying to do all these things because you're trying to convert the king. Because for whatever reason, again, people are looking to like this one guy, or they're looking to like five different people, or Jamie Dimon of the world. And they're like, well, if he says it, then I believe it. So I think that's why we see so much, because now I'm speaking to Bitcoiners. I think that's why we see so much of that going on, because it's like, hey, those are the people that have the power, at least in the fiat system. And if they say this, then all of a sudden people's heads snap and they turn and say, oh, then I need to go check this thing out. I just don't know. I don't know what the right answer is at the end of the day. I mean, we're trying to educate people. We've had black swan events. Politicians are coming in. At some point, somewhere, I think we're in that gradually process. The iceberg is melting, underneath. And at some point, I think it does flip. But is that an event that happens? Is that, is it a war that happens that galvanizes everybody and we realize what's going on? Is it, the banking system's being knocked out and people are like, oh, this is the only thing I have? I don't know what that is. And I think that's what that's the sense I get from a lot of people. A lot of Bitcoiners are kind of just like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what ends up having to happen, but that's where I think we get a lot of this going on. Like the lending, the politicians, and like kind of clamoring for politicians to be in. I don't get that. I don't understand that. Like I said, I use them as far as you can throw them. But like the lauding over, like I haven't watched any. I didn't watch the Trump speech. I didn't watch I mean, we were at the conference, obviously, but like I didn't go to his speech. I didn't go to J.D. Vance's. I don't care. Like let's use them for what we can. And then cool. Like I'm with it. So my other, like I said, the other unpopular part, I guess, was like just being involved in politics, not being involved, but doing what you can in the sense of a local level. And the old cliche of just being being the change you want to see type of thing, like just being involved. Because my thought since I was a kid was, if I'm not involved in some way, and that could be involved in many ways. It could be involved with your voice. It doesn't have to just be with, I'm voting, or it doesn't have to just be with like, hey, I'm going to run for some position of power. It can be with your voice. It can be with your feet. It can be with all these things. Like we have many more options available to us now than we did even, 10, 20, 30 years ago. So being involved in some way, voicing your opinion somehow, some way, shape, or fashion, whether it's with your wallet, with your feet, you're moving. I mean, you see the brain drain going on all over. Look at California. You don't think California got the message? There's clearly things happening where we have many ways. It used to be the ammo box and the ballot box were the ways you could vote, for thousands of years, really. Now you can vote with your wallet. You can not buy from certain places. You can leave the state. You can do all these things. You have Twitter, like, or X, or Noster. Like you have all these things where you can voice your opinion. Say, I'm not taking this anymore. Those are things to me where everyone has to be motivated. And then that's where I think Ross is correct in the sense of being unified, and everyone has to be unified against the powers that be. They have to be unified against this old system. To your point, Michael, of Bitcoin is a seismic sea change. It is. And that's why so many people have such a hard time, that the macro guys like a Jeff Snyder. Jeff Snyder has a very hard time because he's taking the system and he's learned this whole system and spent so much time and energy learning a pseudoscience. But he doesn't know it's a pseudoscience because he's the frog in the boiling pot. He's in the water. He's a fish in the water. And he's a brilliant guy. I mean, like a lot of these guys are brilliant guys. He's macro economists and macro. They're brilliant dudes. but they know something, as Ronald Reagan said, they know so much that isn't true. You know, like, it's not that they're dumb people. They're smart people, but they know so much that isn't so. And so because of that, you have this like weird, like Matrix vibe of like, they're hopelessly inured in the system. They're fighting you. They're fighting you to stay in the system. And you're like, bro, like, what are you doing? It's like, I always use a Titanic example of being on the Titanic. It was hard. You know, everyone's the famously, you know, like, oh, it's not sinking. It's not sinking. It's unsinkable. Just like the dollar. The dollar's unsinkable. The nation state, we've got 13 aircraft carriers. Like, what do you mean? Like, we can't, we're dominant. Yay. And all it took was, you know, a little more listing to the side, a couple more people jump off the boat. And then eventually people on the boat are realizing, and then people on the lifeboat, once you move away from the system, you become, you know, you jump out of that boiling pot. You realize like, oh shit, that thing really is hot. That was burning me to death. Or, hey, well, the ship is sinking. The dollar is going down. But it's so hard to see inside that system, as Jeff Booth always talks about. You can't fix the system within the current system. You have to your point, as you brought up numerous times, so happily, you have to change the complete system. And you can't understand that unless you get out of that. So that's why a Jeff Snyder, a George Gammon, these guys have understood the plumbing of a fake system. And so it doesn't make sense to them. They're like, they're trying to fit a round peg in a square hole. They're like, it doesn't work, guys. Like, you guys are dumb crypto guys. Like, it's like, no, we're different systems, man. So anyway, that's a end of rant. Thank you.
Hey, I love it. That's great. And I think a really useful way for people to think about why people like Peter Schiff, George Gammon, Jeff, you know, those sorts of people who really are, I mean, brilliant Peter guys. Schiff, maybe we can rag on him all we want, and I do often, but he understands the fundamental problems. Yep. It's the reason he's been, you know, lobbying for gold for so long, mm-hmm. but he can't not win with the thing he's been pumping for forever. And, you know, his ego is getting in the way of him, like, stepping outside of what he thought the solution might be, because there's a new sheriff in town, you know?
100%.
Man, dude, I wish we could. I'm glad we didn't get to talk longer at the conference, because I wouldn't have gotten to meet anyone else. I would just sit
there. I know, we've been talking to you for hours.
Dude, seriously. Well, hey, why don't you give a handoff? Tell people where they can find you. You've got an awesome podcast. Anything else you want to share?
Yeah, I believe it's just Brandon_Gentile on everything, basically. I think whether it's Noster, Twitter, YouTube, you can find me there, the Playable Character Show, but it's just my name, or it's like Brandon_Gentile as well. So, you know, yeah, check that out. We got a lot of great guests, some good ones right now, a bunch of really good ones coming up. We're going to have kind of run the gamut of people that are inside the system and outside the system as we go forward here. So it's going to be interesting to talk to a lot of those people. And yeah, I appreciate you having me on so much. Like, it's always amazing. As I was telling you, I had to fly from Vegas to a bachelor party for one of my family members and straight there. So it's been a wild last week. And but at the fire one night, I had about, I don't know, probably a dozen guys around the fire. And I was given a dissertation, which was asked for. I wasn't berating people, but was asked for a 15-minute Bitcoin dissertation of what was going on at 1 a.m. one night. So and we had a great, it was probably an hour discussion just back and forth. And I think I, you know, incepted a few things into guys' heads and things to think about. And they had, you know, a lot of great questions, a lot of like finance guys, stuff like that, a lot of really good questions. But a lot of this, like what we just talked about today, of like just the ills of the system. And that's what we talk about on the show. Anytime I'm on Noster or Twitter, that's what we're talking about, obviously. And yeah, I'm glad that you and I didn't talk more. Yeah, we would have taken up 3 days, just you and I, like, talking in a hotel room somewhere and not got anything done. So
for sure, man. No, hey, I'm so glad we got to do this, though. I know it's been a busy weekend for you, so thank you for making time, and look forward to doing it again sometime soon.
Yeah, I appreciate you, Michael. Thanks so much for having me on. Look forward to doing
it
again.
Take care, Brandon. And that's a wrap. Again, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Brandon. I know I had a blast. I could have talked with him for hours. I'm truly glad that we didn't meet up for much longer at the Bitcoin conference, because I think we just shut the place down. Go check out his podcast. Go follow him on X, Noster, everywhere. He's an awesome guy. He's doing some great stuff. Very principled Bitcoiner. Love everything that he's working on. And of course, if you need help with setting up a self-custody solution to protect your Bitcoin, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We can walk you through how to do it the right way the first time. No compromises, no shortcuts. We also help with online security, setting up your privacy phone. We have a Plan B residency option, and Panama is looking like one of these Bitcoin havens, so you need to consider that as the rest of the world looks like it is falling apart. Again, it's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Give us a follow on X. We're at @thebitcoinway_. You can follow me there as well, @theothermjordan. And until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.